gonna be a class where we're gonna have some class participation, I hope. That we all get involved in what the purpose of this class is, what the purpose is that God has set before us in our lives. And I want you to turn to John 15:16. And this will apply directly to us. Now these cards, there's a place on the card to put your name.
Thank you.
And I had you get five because I'm hoping that you will take the five cards that I give you and give them to somebody. This is not a practice exercise. This is something that I really want us to do. And to do that, you know, we have to put ourselves out there. We have to get out of this little zone that we're used to, which I'm in too. I'm probably at the top of my game of being a failure in personal work. And that's one of the reasons I chose this class. I've kind of talked before in bits and pieces, but it seems like you get all zealed up. It's like when you first become a Christian, you got this zeal, man, you just can't wait to tell everybody. And it kind of starts fizzling out.
Even more than five.
And then when I
do, you have to take five or can
take
you...
ten. I don't care. But whatever you take, you got to use, John.
I use them.
Okay, good for you. That's what
Jesus. That's you slip.
Here's another thing that I do. These are all available in the deacon's room, and I tell you how these work. This is crazy. Last Sunday, as a matter of fact. And the Pizza Hut backed into the lady. Me and Donna was talking, having a good time. I didn't hit her hard, but enough to, you know, she knew. So I was talking to her, leaning in her car, just talking to her, and she seen this. She said, "You know, Levon?" I said, "Well, yeah, I do." So people do notice. People do notice those things. So no biggie, but anything to expose the gospel to people. Because that opened up a door with this lady, Frida. I got her name. I got her phone number. So, who knows? But what it done, it opened the door. And these cards will do the same thing if you use them with boldness. I mean, not running over somebody. And you know I don't mean that when I say that. But boldness in remembering who we are and what our purpose is in this life. So John 15:16. This is really an interesting verse. It says, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you." And that's us. God has chosen us and ordained you that you should bring forth fruit. Now, every one of us in here knows exactly what that means, or to bring forth fruit. In other words, we can't be a silent Christian, a bench warmer. You think about sports, you know, where there's a certain amount of people that never get to play. Well, God has not chosen us for that. And we all have these different talents. And I think Jim is going to talk about that, about the different talents. We're all not going to be great speakers like Mike and Curtis Pope and people that devote that time because they're good at that. But that doesn't mean you can't be a great personal worker. The only way you can be a failure of a personal worker, how do you think? The only way you can be a failure.
Not trying at all.
That's right. That's exactly right, by not doing it. So, but God has chosen us to do that, and we're going to have to do it. Now, I want to tell you about my experience, how I've become a Christian. I was about 23, 24 years old, and I was in a band. Doing pretty good, happy, not looking for anything to do with religion. I didn't even know who Noah was. I mean, that's how far removed from religion I was. I played at a school where Donna was, going to school. She was cleaning up afterwards, and that's how I met Donna. And she stood behind this great big chair, and I tried to talk to her. Man, she didn't want nothing to do with me. I thought, what's wrong with this woman? She said, we have nothing in common. You're not, you know. She said, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't dance. She said, I didn't even come to dance. She said, I won't do none of the things that you probably do. It really caught me off guard because I had met Christian girls before, you know, and you know what I mean. They weren't Christian at all. Well, finally, after a while, I said, look, just let me phone number. I got her phone number. And finally got to talk to her. And that was my first introduction to God. I mean, my very first introduction. She was telling me things, and she said, and she'd done everything she could to get rid of me. I mean, she said, look, we're so far apart, you know, that this was just not going to work. But she said, you can call me. Well, okay, I got the hint. So I called her, and she started telling about God. She said, look, one of the things, if we even go anywhere with this here, you know, I go to church every Sunday and Wednesday, you would have to be interested in what I'm interested in, and that is God. But I wasn't. I wasn't interested in God whatsoever. But I was interested in her. So it progressed and progressed. I went to church. Not only was she a nut, I met a whole room full of nuts. As far as my eyes was concerned, I never met people like this. Well, it didn't take long that I realized that Donna was a genuine thing. She was authentic. She was what religion is, in my mind, would have been, a good girl. I mean, there was no betrayal to her God for me or anybody. She was faithful to her God. And that really impressed me. It really caught my attention that this was the real deal. Well, not only that, one of her roommates, which I was telling Mike last night, it was bigger than Mike. I mean, she was a big girl. She threatened me. I mean, and I think she had a knife. But she didn't need it. She could have beat me up anyway. She was a big girl. And she warned me. She said, look, you need to be really careful with Donna. And that impressed me, too, because I got thinking, why would they want to protect her? Well, because Donna had done show them what kind of girl she was. And they wasn't like her, and she knew it. And this girl was protecting her. So when you put all these things together, you know, I'm thinking, you know, which way do I want to go here? Well, I decided I didn't want to go that way. I was doing good. I was in a band, having fun, had a music store, and on. So I said, look, this is probably not going to work. Well, it wasn't long, 3 months, 4 months, maybe 6 months. I called her. I come crawling back. I was smitten by her, but I was interested in what she was saying. You know, this is real stuff. And it's exciting. It's exciting to teach this class this morning. And I remember some of the very first verses that I was learning. I remember Galatians 6:7, be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever you sow, that so also shall you reap. And I thought, boy, that fits Donna to a T. You know, because she's a good girl, and she would be mortified. I'm glad she didn't come this morning. But you know, when you remember those verses, and I remember Romans 6:1, do not continue in sin, that grace may abound, God forbid. And I remember several, I'm not going to go through all the verses, I remember, but those verses that really were so profound, so practical, I mean, they were the real deal. And then when I met these people at Riverview Church of Christ in Riverview, Florida, you know, they were all the same. These are people who are dedicated to serving God. Now, I had long hair. I was a hippie, had nothing in common with these people, but they took me in just like I was their son. And that kind of caught me off guard. You know, I mean, I found out that they really did like me. You know, they didn't shun me because I had long hair. I didn't cut my hair yet. And of what I had done in the past, they didn't ask me what I had done in the past. Finally, Glenn Barnhart. Some of you may know him. He was a teacher at Florida College. Him and I love that guy. We used to go out on Tuesday nights, even before I was a Christian, and teach him Bible classes. And, you know, here's another guy that's a real deal. Well, it wasn't long. I got baptized in that little church. And kind of that's my story of how I become a Christian, from absolutely zero to where I wouldn't have been counted a good prospect. I mean, who would have counted me as a prospect to come to God? I mean, just every Friday and Saturday night, I was in a bar playing, or it's college or school or somewhere, playing rock and roll. And you know the part of that story. You know, it's just not a good atmosphere. So I wouldn't have been considered any kind of a prospect. And these people knew that. They knew, you know, what I was, where I come from. Well, okay, now you take that from nothing to me getting baptized. And now I don't know how many people that I would have had a part in baptizing. I have baptized some people. And there's really no telling. But from that one, in fact, my mom and dad was 82 years old. When I became a Christian, they said, look, don't come here with your brainwashing stuff. That's what they told Don and I. And my mom, I love her, but she used to plan dinners late on Sunday afternoon so we wouldn't go to church. We broke that rule, I think, one time. We said, look, you have dinners on time because we're going to go to church. So she didn't want nothing to do with anything to do with the church. She thought she was just fine. It wasn't because she was a bad person. My mom and dad, great people. I mean, honest people, good people. But they thought they were okay. So don't come brainwash me and say, we got to go to church. Well, they were 82 when we finally baptized them. You know, so from me being a hippie, a dippy hippie at that, to, you know, here this morning teaching a Bible class. And I'm not doing that to brag on myself. I'm doing that because there's many other people out there that have an honest heart. God says the harvest is white, but the laborers are what? What is there, 15 in here this morning? I mean, stop and think about it. Now, Johnny, I asked Johnny to come in. I hope he stays in the class. But I asked Johnny, he's got sort of the similar. Now, I was 25, I think, when I became a Christian, maybe 24. And I almost the same age, weren't you, Johnny?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now James is going to tell you a story. He was raised in the church, but he had some circumstances. So there's all kinds of circumstances in this world that we're going to deal with, and different kind of people. Do you mind telling your story, Johnny?
Yeah, I can tell people. I'm here.
Okay. Wherever you want to do it.
Well, I grew up, my parents were Baptists. My dad was baptized at the Clearport Baptist Church when he was a young boy. He kept his membership there, and mine was at Liberty up in Allen County. So you know how often we attended church. So I was probably 13 or 14, and they were having a revival at the Rockfield Baptist Church. So some of the guys there, older, I was working in hay out in the field, and they came and they asked me, did I believe in Jesus Christ? And I told them, yeah. So they said, you're saved. So anyway, that's how I became a member of the Rockfield Methodist Church, and they even sprinkled, baptized me, so I know what it means to be sprinkled. I went to Vietnam on my dog tags, and those don't know dog tags, that's something in military you wear all the time. It's got that I was a Methodist. But through the grace of God, I lived through the Vietnam War as in infantry, which was amazing. And it bothered me from the influence of Mammy, that's Jess's mom, had on me, because I was originally dating her while I was in the military. And welding morning. Of course, I quit going to the Rockfield Church when I bought Chessa, okay? So I was tending there, and I thought I was fine as a Methodist going to the old Church of Christ thing, but I had my eye on her. But Mammy had a great influence. I don't want to leave her out of the story, but Chessa's mom. She was great influence on not only me, but a lot of people. But a man named Edwin Hayes came to West End, and I like to say he rolled up his sleeves, but he didn't. He wouldn't roll up his sleeves, and there was a reason. But he went to come into my house. He had bed sheets about the size, a little bigger than that, and he'd hang them up, and we'd have studies. And we had had about three or four studies. And I was out in the barn working, and it just hit me what I needed to do from the studies I had with Edmund. So when he got there that evening for us to have our next study, I said, Edmund, there's no need of us having our next study, and you can just see his feathers drop. And I paused for just a little bit, and I said, because I know I need to be baptized. So on June the 27th of 1972, I was baptized by Edmund Hayes at the old building. And this is the most important part that I try to emphasize to people. Just getting baptized, that's just the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think we fail a lot of not continuing to educate after someone becomes a Christian. About the failure we do here at West End, that's it. We don't educate babes in Christ. I had to give up playing my fast pitch softball because, why? I drinking beer went along with it. So since June the 27th of 1972, I've not touched a drink of beer. But taking things away that you used to do, you gotta fill it.
Yeah.
With Christian things. So that's a real short part of what was a lot of work by individuals for me to become a Christian.
And now Johnny's another, who knows how many people that he had a part in converting. And the paper that I passed out, I mean, I know y'all know these things, how to become a Christian, but that is mentioned in there that, you know, just not baptism and nice knowing you, so to speak. John and I has taught, I don't know if we taught it once or twice, on the
Christianity
101, and that's the continuing of, you know, of young babes in Christ. So I'm gonna let Jim tell his story when he's teaching the class, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. Because it's interesting too, because he was a Christian, but he kind of, I'll leave it at that. 2 Peter 3:9, it's an interesting verse. It says, the Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering toward us, that he's not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And, you know, I've wrote over that verse probably who knows how many times, and I know you have too, but God has a deep concern for those that are lost. And the part of this class is going to be putting that kind of concern, and we're going to talk about agape love, because that's going to be a big part of that. That's that self-sacrificing love that I think we have to get some sort of a grasp of that to be a successful soul winner. Because if you really don't have this concern and you're not long-suffering, and that you don't want anyone to perish, I think you have to understand agape love. Now, on the day of Pentecost, there were 3,000 souls saved. And you think, man, that's a great number. That's a lot of people. And it is, but you stop and think, there was 1 to 2 million people there on that day. So if you say, instead of 2 million, 1.5 million, if I cut that down, that's less than 0.02%. You know, Matthew 7 talks about the gate is wide to destruction. What's the other part of that verse?
Narrow.
Pardon?
The narrow.
Yeah, narrow's the gate, and few are going to enter in. Well, do we take that and say, well, that's what it is anyway, so that's their problem? Well, of course not. So when you think about some of these verses, to be a successful soul winner, I'm just going to kind of give a rough outlay of the class. We're not going to go through all these because we certainly wouldn't have time. I got a text here a couple weeks ago a friend of mine is having marital problems. And he asked me to pray for him, him and his wife. And I really got thinking about that because I'm really concerned about this couple. I mean, really concerned. They are friends of mine. And I thought, well, am I a righteous? You know, he's asking me to pray for his marriage. He's so concerned about it. And I thought, man, am I really a righteous man? James 5 talks about, you know, the prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And we're going to talk about that, not this morning, but I want to make sure, because I thought about that before I prayed for him. You know, man, I want to make sure. What if I'm just mouthing a bunch of words out of habit? You know, he's my friend, but, you know, he's going to have to work it out. What can I do? You know, I really wanted to pray for him. I have a big concern for him, and I want to make sure that I am that righteous person. And in order to do personal work, soul winning, don't I have to be that righteous person in James 5? Not just a silent Christian, so to speak. You know, doing soul winning, personal work, is an intentional act. It's just not something that happens. And I think a lot of times we wait for something to happen. But it's not. It's an intentional act. And that's what those five cards were, or how many were John took, are for. They're to be intentional, to really put them to good use. Purpose in your heart, so to speak, to use those cards. Pick somebody out that you know, or don't know, but you have some sort of contact with. I have drawn, and you know, I'm sure you have too, but I have put cards everywhere. Seems like I have dropped cards. And I don't know if any of them, I don't know that I ever really got a call because of that. But I don't know that somebody wasn't interested and may have taken it a step further. So, you know, Paul, in Romans 7, you can turn there. We're not going to study it. We're just going to kind of talk a little bit about the things which prevent us or obstacles in our lives that trip us up. It says, chapter 7, verse 15 says, "For that which I do allow not, for that, for what I would, that I do not. But what I hate, that's what I do." Isn't that an interesting verse coming from Paul? He says, I am struggling with myself, my sinful nature self. I'm doing things that I know I shouldn't. In fact, I'm doing things that I hate. You know, that's interesting to me. And then you go down to verse 18. "For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing." So we got quite a battle, don't we? Because the easy road here would be, I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. Because it's a fight to do it. It's not natural. I don't think it's natural hardly for anybody. Because it's self-sacrificing to do that. To take my time off on a Saturday afternoon or any day, and I'm sure you've all had personal Bible classes with people, you've had talks with people, it takes away your time, don't it? Mm-hmm. So the easy thing would be to what? Let somebody else do it. Let Mike do it. That's what we pay him for. That's why you guys have elders. Let the elders do it. And a lot of people, unfortunately, think like that. I really appreciate it. The ones around. There's a bunch of girls going to come in here too, by the way, but they just couldn't. So Paul says, "For no good thing, for to will is present with me." In other words, I want to do it, but I can't do it. But Paul did do it. And then he says, "But how to perform that which is good, I find not. For the good that I would, I do not. but the evil which I would, that I do. Here's Paul. Here's Paul that's fighting the exact same thing that I do, and I suspect most of you in here fight that. It's a constant battle that Satan's throwing these darts. You know, he's going around like a roaring lion, doing what? Devouring. You know, we look at that verse and say, oh yeah, okay. I mean, there's really a lion running around going to devour it. You know, it's easy to look at those verses in a light, laughter sort of way, you know, because nah. But it's pretty serious stuff. Here's Paul dealing with this. For the good that I would, I do not. Now, we can take that road, or we cannot take that road. Paul says this, but what road did he take? Well, we know which road he took. Matthew 26. Remember Matthew 26, where Jesus, they're in the garden, Jesus is praying, and he comes back to the disciples. What are they doing?
Sleeping.
And Jesus, what's Jesus say?
Couldn't you stay awake even an hour?
Yeah, you can't stay awake even an hour. And the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. So when you couple that with what Paul's got going on here, I don't think we're above that. I think that's just where we fit. And so this class is going to kind of be, I hate to say cheerleading class, but it kind of is, to bring us to the awakening that we understand these things, we understand agape love, we understand our responsibility. You know, in John, turn to John chapter 6. This is always a really interesting verse to me. Chapter 6, verse 59, it says, you know, these things said he in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Jesus teaching in the synagogue to people, just, you know, like we're having a class in here this morning. But verse 60, it's crazy. It says, many, therefore, of his disciples, when they heard this, said, well, this is hard. Who can hear it? Who can do it? You know, they just simply say, this is hard. Well, it is hard. This class is going to be an intentional class. It's just not going to be in a class. I hope I get something out of it. I really want us to get involved. Now, verse 66 of the same chapter says, from that time on, many of the disciples went back and walked with him no more. What a sad commentary for those people. I guess they just wanted an easy road. And when it became a little harder, I just can't do it. Now, I think there's people in the church today that are coming to church, but they're no longer walking with him. Is that possible? I think it is, too. I think there are people. And the reason I say that, I find myself in that same situation at times. I'm not critiquing any of you guys. These struggles are real. And we can find ourselves coming to church and taking the Lord's Supper and not paying a bit of attention, not participating at all in our purpose. You remember John 15, 16, I have chosen you. So, Johnny?
Yeah, along with what you're just saying here about it was hard and some couldn't take it, to what you said earlier on the married couple that was asking for your prayers, that is something you and I both know as elders and dealing with. That is something, marriage is hard. Marriage is hard. A lot of people enter into marriage not knowing what they're getting into. They think it's the same as the dating game. And so many times, and I don't know how far along this couple that you're talking about that, but so many times they have grown so far apart that it makes it very difficult for elders to intervene in and repair the destruction. So that is something we as always Christians need to keep an eye on, because we all need help from time to time. And when there's going to be problems within a marriage, the sooner that other Christians get a hold of it, and prayer is great, but helping them along with their problem is also a great thing that Christians have to do to repair what has been affected.
Yeah, because when you stop this a little bit more on that, how these problems usually start, they start thinking on something, and then they start thinking on divorce. And you become captive, Satan's kind of taken over your mind. But anyway, I do want to talk about, and I went through and I studied quite a bit about what makes a righteous person. And most of it's in James, by the way, that I chose. So,
Jim, how close are you to both of them?
Pretty close.
Okay. Can I? I don't know if you've thought of it, but can't you ask them, say on an afternoon, say, get in touch with them, ask them to come to church with you?
Oh, they go to church.
They go to church.
That's the sad part, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, Christians have problems too.
I just threw that out there.
Yeah, that
happens
more
than you think.
Yeah, it's always a sad deal. I've gone through it many times. I've seen many Christian families broken up, and it still tears me up. I mean, I think of all the kids, all the years I've been a Christian, 48 years, that have fallen away. I mean, probably 90%. I don't have an exact number, but I think of all those kids. I remember when they were just, some of them were born. They've fallen away.
Well, Jim, my problem is, it affects me very hard, is my family.
Yeah.
They know right and wrong. They know what to do. But if I come on too strong, it's like...
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, you keep bringing your granddaughter so I can keep talking to her.
Well, she I ain't even going to go there.
I know. He brings his granddaughter, and I've met her, and I've talked to her.
She's a handful.
And got about it. Yeah, so was I. Now, Matthew chapter 4, 19-20. This is a kind of a her verse. And when you try to apply it to yourself, it's kind of scary. It says, and Jesus said, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Well, that part sounds kind of easy, don't it? Okay, great. That sounds great. But look what they done. And straight away, they threw down their nets, so to speak, and they followed him. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about in this class, is throwing down our nets. We get so complicated in our lives. We have so many implications in our lives. It just seems like everything's going on except throwing down our nets and following God. I let everything get in the way, it seems like. And I'm not bragging. I'm sad to say that. And most of it I can justify. Well, I go to work. I got to help the boys. We got this business. I got to take care of Don. It's hard. And now that I'm an elder, there's only so much a fellow can do. You have your life. You have your family. So where do I fit in here? And Travis,
go ahead and finish your point.
No, go ahead.
I always ask the question, why? Why did they throw their nets down and leave immediately? Why didn't they ask the question, hey, what are we going to do for food? Where are we going to get money? What about my family? And the answer is really, really simple. Yeah. It was a hope they had never encountered before. And through recently, with the events in my life and just people that I know, and Curtis mentioned this last week, you start to see more and more people looking for something to fill that cliche God-shaped hole. Yeah. In their lives, and you realize they're just chasing that contentment and that hope and that peace, and they have no idea where to find it. And we know the answer. And you know, we think, well, people wouldn't react that way today. Nonsense. Of course they will. If we share the hope that we have, people will respond. And it's just a matter of us having the conviction and the authenticity like Donna had when she converted you.
And I'm sure people in here, Donna's not the only one. Everyone in here was converted some way. Somebody took the time to talk to us reprobates. You know, because that's, you know, what were we? What were we? Enemies of the cross, weren't we? I mean, that's what we were. I wasn't for God, so I was what?
Against
God. So somebody took the time, knowing that Donna understood the scriptures enough to know that I was an enemy of the cross. You know, when I think about that, man, I never thought about that then. I didn't think about anything.
But so was Saul, though. Saul Tarsus was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And look what the words, you know, he was told to go and Ananias would speak words to it.
Yeah. So, you know, when you, and what Travis was talking about in Matthew, if you turn over to Matthew 6, verse 30, says, where so God so clothed the grass of the field, which tomorrow is, and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you or us? And then it says, oh ye of little faith. And that what it all comes down to? Isn't that why we don't throw down our nets? It isn't because I'm busy at work. I could make some time. And I'm sure if you start filling in the slots, Johnny?
Go along with what Brother John said, and all of us are in that to some extent. When you go to Mark, you see that James and John was working with their father mending the nets, and they left their father and went to follow Jesus. And sometimes that's what some of us have to do.
So, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and what's going to happen, what Travis was talking about. All these things are going to add unto you. Now, how all that takes place, we have to make it take place. You have to trust God. And, oh, ye of little faith. I don't know what y'all's faith levels are. You don't know what mine is. But what I want to do is improve. Because we can all change and do better. So that's one of the things that we're going to talk about.
You're not going to get shot. You're not going to get murdered.
Probably. No.
Just do it. And I say things that most of you say, well, he needs a combat. But that's the way I talk. So you have to look over.
Hey, you go for it, John. Everybody knows the spirit that you're talking in.
Because I have the hardest time getting certain people in my family just to take note.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel bad, like I ain't doing the right thing.
Well, that's one of the things we're going to talk about too, is we plant the seed. God does add the increase. And a lot of times it's easy to get discouraged. You know, last 3 months, I mean, I didn't get baptized. That's it. You know, so throwing down your nets sounds easy enough, don't it? Well, that's great. You know, I follow Jesus. I mean, but we know it's not that easy. It's very difficult. And I'm sure everyone in this classroom this morning wants to do as Jesus asked, or you wouldn't be here this morning. You wouldn't have taken time. So I know. There's going to be something here that we all got. Luke chapter 14. And here's another part of this piece of becoming a soul winner. Chapter 14, starting verse 26 through 35. If any man come to me, and hate not his father and mother and wife and children, brother and sister, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. So quickly, does that mean we got to hate mom and dad?
No.
No.
You got to put God first.
It's just a phrase that nothing's above putting God first. Nothing in our lives, not my job at work, not Donna. And that sounds crazy, doesn't it? I mean, that's just almost an impossibility, because I can never repay her. I mean, I prayed for her just millions of times, thankful that she was who she was and introduced me to this. So he's not saying that we have to hate them. We just have to put God first. And whoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And that's what I was talking about a minute ago. We can come to church and we can even take the Lord's Supper. But if you're not really putting yourself out there, you can't be my disciple. Matthew 7:21, what's he say? You know, Lord, Lord, didn't we do all these great, look at me. I did all these great things in your name. And I did this and I did that. And what's Jesus telling? Depart from me, you workers of iniquity. I didn't even know you. Now, he's talking to religious people. And I know everyone is, and that's the last thing we want to hear, isn't it? You know, I go to church every week and I do this. They say, wait a minute. You got it all wrong. And I think we get it all wrong because we put too many obstacles in front of serving God first. And that's hard. I mean, life's easy in this country. Life's easy. And we tend to just take things for granted. You know, it's just too easy. So anyway, for which of you intending to build a tower setteth not down first and counteth the cost? Well, when I become a Christian, I really didn't count the cost. I didn't understand the cost and didn't understand any of it. You know, the snippets of parts that I did understand, I was just really excited about. And the great thing is, I haven't lost that excitement. I made wind way down at times, and I've got to recharge my battery. But this excitement, this is pretty exciting stuff. When you read these passages, how can you help not get excited and want to teach somebody else? It's impossible. If you read them, it's almost impossible not to do it if you study them. So, which, you know, but counting the cost, that's why John 6:60, from that time on, it's just too hard. You know, if it's going to be easy, you can count me in. When it crosses this line, I'm not going to do it. And that's a conscious decision, a sad decision that so many make. Then verse 29, lest halfway after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, and all that, behold, begin to mock him. That's sad, isn't it? You start something and you're just not able to finish it. So we should count the cost being in this class this morning. It's a cost. It's a put yourself out there cost. Saying this man begin to build and unable to finish. And that mocking, what king going to make a war against others? Well, we don't have to go. There's plenty of verses, but you get the point there. We need to count the cost of being a soul winner. I don't think there's such a thing as a non-productive disciple, because there's something that every single one of us in here can do. Now, the elders have talked, you know, a lot of times we are diverse. I mean, diverse five elders, or we're six. And we've talked about any time, but the input of those six diverse. Wow! I told you this is exciting. It's great. So and Jim's going to talk about the talents, and that's going to be part of that. Now I'm going to teach Wednesday night. Then I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks, and Jim's going to teach the class. So I hope you allow me back. after you listen to him.
Well, why are you leaving? You can't be taking off once you get started.